Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm David Ruddy, and Steve's going to talk about some of the more interesting stuff. So I just want to give a brief introduction to Project Euclid and some of the ways in which we deal with math and tech, and then Steve's going to take over and show MathJax and get into some of those details. So I'll try to go as quickly as possible. Excuse me? Oh, okay. Well, I'll go slower then. what is Project Euclid? It's a hosting service, online hosting service for scholarly literature in mathematics and statistics. It was started at Cornell University Library about a decade ago, and it was a response to something called that in the library world was called the serials crisis, which is this phenomena of serial, the cost of serial literature, particularly in scientific, technical, and medical literature, going up every year, and actually what we can buy decreasing. So at some point in the future, we pay an astronomical price and get absolutely nothing for it. So it was, you know, something that libraries felt was an unsustainable situation. Caused in a lot of ways because the way in which scholarly literature is published and the academy tends to lose control of that literature. It's faculty give the fruits of their labor to commercial companies that then sell it back to the academy. And so there was a lot of talk about trying to shake up that paradigm of scholarly publication, and libraries were attempting to do a variety of things. There's consortial buying and more emphasis on interlibrary loan and all sorts of things. And this was just one project that came out of the library world. It was an attempt to create a not-for-profit alternative to publishing. We chose to work in the area of mathematics and statistics. We had early support from the Mellon Foundation. Started in talking about this in 1999 and officially launched the website in 2001. Everything was open at that point, but from the beginning of the project, we were charged with making this self-supportive. So there had to be a business model, which we developed over those 3 years or so. And in 2003, we began implementing this business model where we charged for certain services and sold subscriptions and collected money from libraries for those. It's kind of a complicated business model, but it's one that by 2006 we'd achieved some degree of stability. We were covering our costs. We certainly weren't making any money, but that wasn't the object here. We didn't have stockholders to give profits to. We were getting larger. We now have 62 journals in Euclid, hundreds of subscribers. We work with some member societies that have thousands of members that also get access. So the operation has become fairly large, and in 2007 we began looking for a partner that could bring to the library more expertise in publishing, particularly in the business side. And we had a long tradition with Duke University Press. And so in July of 2008, it's actually 2 years ago this coming Thursday, we signed a legal partnership agreement with Duke University Press. And the responsibilities break down more or less this way. Duke in general is dealing with more the user and customer facing services, and Cornell is dealing with the back end, the systems and operations there. Our recent snapshot of holdings, as I said, 62 journals. We've branched out now and are beginning to put monographs in, have about 160, and we're going to load about 500 more monographs over the course of the summer that we've had in another collection of the Cornell Library. We have some conference proceedings, and we're now up to about 1.4 million pages, and nearly 70% of that is open access. And that's because of a variety of decisions that publishers and Euclid make about the content. So there's some titles that are completely open access. There are a number of titles that have open access windows, you know, so anything older than 3 years or 5 years is open. And so if you add up all the open content, that's a fairly substantial amount. We work with a number of publishers. We have 34 publishers currently, as of last week, that are actively sending us content. So we're receiving their current issues pretty much from one publisher or another pretty much weekly. There are a number of other publications that have kind of archival collections in Euclid, so we're not receiving current content. For one reason or another, they are historically kind of static. These publishers are, we're working with these publishers worldwide, primarily in the U.S., but we've done a lot of work in Japan as well. The titles are presented in Euclid in this kind of manner. Every journal gets a page, and it has a fairly familiar setup. Publishers are responsible for preparing content for Euclid, so we are trying to keep our costs as low as possible. And therefore, we have, in some sense, we've pushed a certain amount of work back to the publisher. So they're responsible for delivering to us a file or a set of files that they say, you know, these are ready to go to users. So we do not get involved in full text. That is, we don't do any kind of conversion of files and anything like that. We get from the publisher something that is ready for end use. We also get from the publisher's metadata about those documents, typically articles. It could be chapters of books, but typically articles. Since this is math and statistics, we need to deal with math somewhat. So, and the math occurs for us in titles and abstracts in the metadata. That's where we experience it. We have currently four ways of encoding the math that comes in those in that metadata. The majority of the math we have is in tech. We don't process that tech. That is, it's just an ASCII string to us. We don't attempt to tech it. Some publishers, I think as Ross Moore mentioned, most mathematicians don't seem to. They just kind of look through that and they. We've never had a complaint about that from mathematicians. Some publishers would like it to look better, and so some have opted for other methods. HTML has been used by some. It's the one we discourage the most because it seems to be the most lack the most future to it in terms of what we can do with it later. Some have inline images. We require that the tech be encoded in the alt tag in those images, and increasingly some are using MathML, for which we also get the tech in the alt text tag. For content display and delivery, we developed a system at Cornell over the years. It was first created in the Cornell Computer Science Department. We adopted it in 2001 and began using it. It's a very modular system. It services distinctly isolated and APIs between those services. The interface then is a separate service. It operates all the metadata in the system is in XML, so what the interface service does is really just respond to a request, assemble the various pieces of XML, and push it out through a style sheet at the end. So there's a lot of flexibility with the way in which we push those pages out. It's easy to change pages for certain journals or under certain conditions, and that's one thing that Steve will mention. So that's something that we, as we implement MathJax, we are going to depend upon. We do push out what the publisher gives us. So if it's incorrect or wrong or ugly, that's what comes out the other end in terms of text. So that also is another issue that Steve will talk about. This is an example of a table of contents page, and if someone were to click on the abstract, they would get down to this abstract level. So this is an example of where we're seeing some tech in titles and in abstracts. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve.
Let me say a few things first about MathJax and then talk about some of the problems David mentioned. MathJax is a suite of Java programs run server-side. It's a promising solution to math rendering on the web. It interprets both LaTeX and MathML. You can mix them on the same page, actually, and it works with any Java-enabled browser without plugins or any font installations necessary. See the main programmer. He developed this is all an offshoot of his JS Math project, which he started in the early 2000s, which was very promising. And then the American Mathematical Society, Design Science, and SIAM got behind it. The AMS would very much like to have some good way of rendering on math reviews on MathSciNet. The mathematics right now, you get look at a review page, you can get tech, or you can actually get a PDF rendering of it. But to have something that can be rendered inside an HTML page would be very advantageous. And Project Euclid is a supporter of this project, along with Elsevier and the American Physical Society. Stole this right off the MathJax page. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about this. You can surf over to mathjax.org and spend the rest of the day with it if you want. But the goal is to produce high-quality display of LaTeX and MathML in HTML pages. And it wants to support all browsers or most browsers that are Java enabled, with no extra setup required by the user. You know, it's one thing, you know, if you've got everything set up on your home machine, you've got IE with Math Player, or you've got Firefox, and you have all the fonts installed you want. But then if you go to a conference or you're using a library machine and you want to look at some of this stuff, well you're lost. Because you're not going to be able to install the add-ons you need or the fonts. So it's a system that's going to be easy for authors, especially. They don't have to do anything new. I mean, they just keep using tech the way they've always used it. Very flexible for publishers and extensible for developers. You can read the rest of it. And I want to repeat a slide that David showed about math and Project Euclid metadata. They publishers provide the content, usually in PDF files, and then XML metadata bundled in a zip, which is ingested into Euclid. And as David mentioned, the math in these fields has historically been rendered as HTML for very simple things, graphic images, tech, and more recently some publishers like Duke are providing MathML for the math. Math is images. The images are accurate and readable, but The images usually do not blend well with the surrounding text. Sometimes you get ransom note effect, and you very often get vertical misalignment. And it's not scalable with text on a page, usually. Math is tech. It's easy for publishers to provide. When publishers are producing the metadata, they're just copying and pasting out of the text source for the article into the metadata field. But as expressions become more complicated, the tech can become difficult for even a mathematician used to tech to parse, to read. And in the metadata itself, when you have displayed equations, interventions are necessary, adding paragraph tags and the like, so it becomes a little bit more complicated. Now, MathML is a mature XML standard, but it's only supported by two common browsers, requiring the installation of fonts and/or plugins. And what the MathJax project wanted was something that could be rendered in any Java-enabled browser. So I told you that MathJax was a suite of Java programs. Configuration is flexible and pretty simple. This is an example of a configuration. You just put this script element, you pop it in the top of your HTML page. You give the path to the main MathJax Java program, and then you configure extensions. What I have here, you notice, are under extensions. We have tech to Jax, which converts text into the internal format of MathJax, which is MathML. I load the two modules so it will understand tech and MathML. And then under Jax, I'm telling MathJax what kind of input it can be expecting and what kind of output I want it to push out to the browser. So in this case, I'm expecting tech input and or MathML input. And I'm outputting HTML, CSS, and I'm going to be pushing, this is the important thing, I'm going to be pushing web fonts out. There are two ways that you can get the rendering properly in your browser. One, if you want to, you can load these fonts on your system and have them, and rendering is much quicker that way. Or they can be served by the server along with the HTML. And in this case, when you load the page, you'll see tech code or MathML for a second, and then it'll morph into actual math, which is nice. And you can also configure here with tech to Jax what kind of inline math is to be expected. So if you're expecting dollar signs for inline math, you can specify that in addition to the usual stuff. So here's the this is my local page. Let me zoom that up a little bit. You can see the script I just told you about for the MathJax configuration. I have another one I've been playing with that I have commented out there, but. And so I just wanted to show you that this first example here is going to be MathML. And as it never was meant for humans to read. So let me show you what that page actually looks like. Let me reload it, and you see it happens very quickly. Zoom in a little bit. Okay, so the first two examples, it's interpreting the MathML and pushing out. HTML and CSS and the fonts. You have a choice of using tech fonts or Styx fonts. right now. And if you can also configure it so if you don't want either of those, then you get image fonts. But I'm using real fonts here. So more MathML. You see, we have scripts, script fonts. I was trying to get as wide a range of stuff as I could find for you here, and with and then we have a tech. It does a pretty good job right now. Some Froctor. And see the interesting thing here is that it's reading the displays. So on your metadata, you don't have to put in special paragraph tags or anything to delineate these things. It does the right techie thing and produces the right output on the page through the CSS. This is an example I'm actually going to show you in a few minutes on the Euclid site. I have this personal philosophy about abstracts. And it actually pains me when I see a lot of complicated math in abstracts, because it defeats the purpose of an abstract, I think. And also lots of complicated formatting. I mean, you should be able to explain what you're doing, what your research entails, as simply as possible, because that abstract is going to be distributed far and wide, and the simpler it is, the more readable it's going to be in different contexts. But at any rate, end editorial comment. Okay, this is an example from this journal on Euclid. Let me zoom in a little here so people at the back can see it. These folks deliver metadata to us, and the mathematics is coded in tech, as you can see. And this is one of those cases where it takes some doing to figure out exactly what's going on. It's difficult to parse. And also the sections here, the two theorems and the list here. I was the one who actually went in and had to do the manual intervention to produce this output on the Euclid page, because otherwise it was just a jumble. Now the same page, using, you know, processing it with MathJax, you see suddenly the math works. Dave,
how does that work on the site? Is there like an option to turn that on, or is the default?
Now, right now we've got it up and working on our development server. So what you saw was the production. The first one was the production site, and this is the development site. I should say that MathJax is in, I'd say, late beta stage right now. So we're hoping by the end of the summer we'll have a production ready MathJax that we can implement. There are some design issues that we need to work out. David and I were talking earlier about how, because of the text font we use with Euclid, that the math fonts being served don't quite fit, but we have the luxury of time and a very good designer to work on those issues. And this is a that was an example of tech and what it looked like. And this is an example from the Duke Mathematical Journal, where it's interpreting the MathML and presenting it. This too is on the development server. Now, MathJax is pretty smart in that it you're able to use user macros. It understands the new command and can work with that, which is a good thing because publishers aren't always scrupulous about sending tech to us in the abstracts that is standard LaTeX. If you're just copying and pasting out of a LaTeX file, if you're using, say, \N for the set of natural numbers, and standard tech isn't going to understand this, if you're not sending over that definition, then MathJax and tech wouldn't either understand what the hell \N meant. So we're hoping that once publishers see the value and the benefit of this, is that it'll be a prod to give us cleaner tech code in the abstracts, or at least to give us, you know, the macro definitions in the preamble, so MathJax can sort it all out. An extra.
Right above there.
Right above there?
Right there. Is there an extra brace there?
What?
The brace was.
It is the one with brace.
Open, close, pull.
Yeah. But it doesn't. It looks like a brace. It doesn't look like a brace.
It's a hyphen up to the close bracket.
Yes.
It's a parenthesis and a hyphen.
Yeah. Oh, it's a brace.
Oh, that's not nice.
That's life.
Which brings me to my next point.
Which is, let me scale back down, and you'll see that suddenly it's not, you're not getting that impingement, right? When you scale up, you start getting some overlap with the surrounding text. So the scaling is not perfect yet. Let me just really exaggerate this.
That's because tech has no space.
Well.
That's what Boris was saying, right?
Well, it's just that it's just as you scale the page up, the tech and the surrounding text is not coordinated. It's not synchronized properly. So there are different levels of scaling where things get worse. Like here, just look at that level, the period and the parenthesis clash, but then if you go up one more level, then they start sorting themselves out again.
That's why it's in beta.
Yeah, that's what beta means.
When you get to a certain level, it clashes. Then when you go even bigger, it doesn't clash.
It doesn't clash. But I mean, there may be. I've seen some other examples where it gets worse as you continue scaling. Radicals are particularly bad in that respect.
Yeah, probably if you scale down from the option, you again get something there.
Yeah, except you can't read that anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. Okay, that's really all I have, so if anybody has any questions.
If a screen reader was reading that to a visually impaired person, would they read the tech or would they be able to read the MathML in that page?
That I'm not sure.
The Wait, one if of, you did
the,
a
one, the one of the modules is voice.
Okay.
But it's not one I've tested yet. In fact, I'm not sure it's even in the beta distribution yet.
Are you able to represent diagrammatic materials such as commutative diagrams and Feynman diagrams and flowcharts and so on?
Some of that, yes. In fact, I was going to check on that before I flew out.
Because it's not really something that's intrinsically supported by font encodings like Unicode. It really is a typographical display feature, and it's quite hard.
I can test it and get back to you very soon, like before the afternoon's out, because I happen to have some pretty grotty commutative diagram code on me.